This is No Bull, a podcast from Bullpen Capital that distills the wisdom of our friend and our coach, Bill Campbell.
I mean, I think the two type of personalities that had trouble connecting with Bill would be the ones that's full of shit, right? The real arrogant person that Bill just wouldn't tolerate. It's like, get real or get out of here. And then there'd be the person who was just off-put by everything. They just wanted to have some cerebral conversation and sort of get five things to do and write it down on their pad and go off and do it and come back to Bill and get the next five things. They wouldn't find what they were looking for in Bill. And they would have missed what made Bill amazing.
I'm Paul Martino, and I'm here with Randy Komisar. Together, we're the co-hosts of No Bull. But really, we're more like the facilitators. Our objective here is to keep Bill's lessons alive in a simple conversational way that he did with us as students. I was one of Bill's last students, and Randy was one of his first. So we have a long perspective on Bill's humor, vulnerability, and to use his own word, humanity.
So let's talk about all the times you worked with Bill. So you got Claris, you got Go. What else is on the list?
So we were first at Apple, right? Then we went off and spun out Apple's software business, and that was called Claris. Apple eventually bought that back from us. It's where I learned good boardroom behaviors from Bill, like throwing a chair at your Apple representative on the board in order to get a point across. So I've learned great tactical skills from Bill through the years.
Excellent.
And then we went on to do Go Corporation, which was – Bill went off to do that. John, I think it was John Doerr and Vinod Khosla who put him in contact with Jerry Kaplan and Robert Carr. He went off to run that. He brought me over there. I think I was his first hire from the outside. Again, a very unusual circumstance because after Apple bought Claris back, I'd wanted a role. I'd been in a kind of this legal role and operations role, but I wanted to try that at scale, and Apple was going to give me that opportunity. So suddenly I now had an opportunity in Apple to become a business leader. And Bill came over to my house one day, literally drove up unannounced, gets out of the car and says, I need you over at Go. And I'm like, Bill, I just got this great job. I've got it's good compensation. It's a great title. I've got lots of responsibility. I've got an opportunity to really grow and develop myself as a leader and manager at scale. And he goes, I need you. I need you. And it's like, need me for what? He said, I don't know what the job is. I just need you there. And what was very interesting is the job he offered me was CFO. Now, mind you, I didn't know how to use a spreadsheet. I couldn't read a P&L. And Bill had been talking to a good friend of ours in common, Dave Kinzer, who was a co-founder at Claris, and Bill was very close with in the Apple years and very close with to the end of his life. And Dave was a finance guy and an operations guy. And Dave was the guy who said, hey, why don't you just make him a CFO? And I don't know where that idea came from. It was the craziest idea. Bill came with the idea, and I thought, yeah, CFO, sure. So I took the CFO job and spent the weekend learning Excel and modeling the company. I did a complete model in 48 hours of the entire company and its next 5 years of what we hoped the business to be. And I became the CFO with a great controller who supported me around all the things I didn't know. But that was the second time I went with Bill. That was a big hole in the ground. In those days, I think we lost $90 million in that business approximately. And today that sounds like, you know, a Series A. But
that's a whole different topic. We'll get to that one later.
But back then, that was I think we left one of the biggest holes in the ground in the valley.
Yes.
And nevertheless, you know, I can remember Bill coming to me at one point. I was out there raising money for it, right? So I was out there and with the help of John Doerr and Vinod Khosla, who really understood how to do this, I was out there raising money for Bill all the time. And there's one point where I came back to Bill where we'd missed the plan again, we were running out of money again, where the product was late again. And I said, Bill, I can't raise another nickel. I don't have the conviction. I can't do it. I can't get in front of other people and tell them we're going to hit this plan. And Bill looked at me. It was very interesting. Bill looked at me. It was 8 o'clock at night. We're in the office. Yeah, nobody else is there. And he looks at me and goes, you really don't have conviction anymore. I said, no, we've missed every deadline. We've run out of money 4 times here. And I was told I only had to raise one more round. I can't do it anymore. And he said, okay, we'll sell the company. That was amazing, right? and said, "We'll sell the company. If you can't, if you don't have conviction anymore, I certainly don't want to try to oversell this to anybody. If you're not here with me, we're not doing this."
Yeah.
And we went out to sell the company.
And so after Go, next time you work with Bill.
So let's see. I do that with Bill, and then Bill goes to Intuit, and Bill and John Doerr help me. And Janny Shader actually makes the introduction for me to get a job at running LucasArts Entertainment. So I become the CEO for George Lucas of his digital business, which was my first CEO job. Bill had designs on me to be a CEO from very early on. I, interestingly enough, did not. And but there was an opportunity and I took it. So at that point, our relationship changed because I wasn't working with Bill every day. I was meeting with him for lunch or dinner every month.
Right.
And that became, by the way, the cadence of our life from then on in. Mm-hmm. For the next 30 years, we had lunch or dinner every month, whether we needed it or not. And in between, we'd have other conversations and meetings as required by whatever projects we're working on together.
And to some extent, I think that's the cadence that he then used with the people he brought on later to coach, right? It was I remember the kind of initial speech. Okay, Martino, we're going to try and meet every week, but that's not going to work because you're too busy and I'm too busy. So it'll be two or three times. And, you know, one of them will be a lunch and one or two of them will be in the office. And, you know, when you cancel the third one because you're too busy, that's okay. And when I cancel the fourth one because I'm too busy, that's okay.
Yes.
But that was kind of the, you want it to be able to interact two to three times a month. There was a certain magic to that pace, actually, and we've always incorporated that with our bullpen CEOs that we coach. And if it's just once a month, it's not enough. And if it's all the time, you know, come on. I mean, look, you have to learn how to run the company on your own. So
yes, I think that's right. And I think that the nice thing about that cadence is, yes, you're having lunch or dinner and you're sort of preparing for that. And you got your little agenda of the things keeping you up at night. And he's got the little agenda of the things that he's been thinking about regarding you and your business. But any time in between, you get him on the phone for 15 minutes. I'm thinking about this. I got this problem. I got to fire this person. He's there for you.
Yes.
And he's in sync because even though he's meeting with you face-to-face monthly, he knows what's going on for you and that business, and he can help you in that moment right on the spot.
That's exactly right. And you really hit with the – boy, there's so much – once you get into the – there is a didactic part to this, and the 2 to 3 times a week and – on demand when required. It's amazing how, I don't know, 2.5 hours of Bill's time a month, you know, what's that 50 hour? I'm kind of doing the math, right? 25 hours in a year, what that could actually be worth for you.
Oh.
And the leverage that you'd get out of that. And, you know, once or twice a year, you'd go, okay, Bill, I need to talk to you right now. And now some thoughts from our friend and mentor, Bill Campbell.
I think the coaching thing that I do is more when I work with Eric Schmidt, example, you know, I want to know where he wants to take the company and then I want to try to help him get there. You know, I think it's different in ways. You know, some of it is, you know, what are priorities? How do you deal with them? You know, what are crises inside the company? How quickly should you make sure that you manage the company out of it? You spend a lot of time with people who have a lot of angst about what goes on in their management team meetings. And it is one-to-one. It's not one-to-many. You know, I spend a lot of time with the CEOs. You know, I do right now. I probably have 4 or 5 companies that CEOs are in their first run at. I got others like Danny Shader at PayNearMe and Justin Kitch at Curious.com. These are wonderful things. I go to them because I've been with them in other companies and they want to have me around again. And I like to do that. But my job is to try to course correct them. I'm not going to sit there and lecture them and bully them.
Great that we're able to get some of these actual quotes in directly from the coach himself. I think the first lesson I ever recall from Bill was, Martino, there are only 2 things CEOs get paid for. Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, wow. Only 2. I'm like, wow, this is going to be easy. There's only 2. They get paid for judgment and they get paid for hiring and firing. And that's it. I was sitting there. And of course, the snarky kid from Philly in me is like, come on, there's got to be more to this. And I was like, hey, Bill, wait a minute. I got one question for you. I got to not run out of money, right? He's like, oh, yeah, for flaky little startup like you, there's a third rule, which is, you know, hey, don't run out of money. But, I'm dealing with Steve Jobs and Larry Page, most of the time. So they're not going to run out of money. But it really is interesting how, to some extent, the lesson was so short and sweet. You get paid for judgment. You get paid for hiring and firing. Anything else you think you're doing, you're wasting your time.
Yeah. Short and sweet is the right way to think about this because he wasn't pithy. He just was essential, right? He would get to the heart of the matter. And I think that's why people could learn from him so easily, because he reduced everything in the crucible to the simplest, easiest, most understandable way of addressing the problem or answering the question. That's a gift. That's a gift. And it was always in a very human way. It was always like a fourth grader could understand it, right? That was the way he was able to reduce those complicated things to very simple answers. A lot of people I know since Bill has died always say, boy, I wish Bill was around so I could ask his opinion or I could get his advice. And I think what they're really saying is Bill made you your best you. And so the idea of being able to go to Bill wasn't to get an answer. It was to be able to find the answer within you or within your experience with Bill's help. He was the guide. He wasn't the answer book. He wasn't there to tell you the answer. He was there to guide you in finding the answer and to give you a path to do that. And what you found was that path was always kind of what your grandmother told you to do, right? It was a very simple path of sort of going back inside, asking what was right and wrong, paying attention, valuing people, making a decision.
And this is fundamental to entrepreneurship. Whenever I get invited to a college campus and they, Martino, give a talk about what it's like to start a company, I start it with something I learned essentially from the rubric you just described from Bill. And I say the following thing. I was like, okay, most of you, you're taking how many classes? Oh, 5 classes. Okay, at the end of the class, there's an exam. At the end of the exam, you get a letter grade and you found out if you succeeded or failed. But let me tell you about entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurship, there is no answer key. There is no grade book. Yeah. The answers are only inside of you, which is what I really understood and learned finally from Bill, because you had to then in a vacuum decide, oh, I have enough. I'm going to quit my job and start a new company. Well, how the hell can you learn that? You cannot learn that in a college setting. There's no class on entrepreneurship. You have to learn about introspection, belief in yourself, and the fact that you are the answer book. And Bill had a great way of bringing this out and making entrepreneurs understand that don't ask me for my opinion, Martino. I got other people I now coach a lot of CEOs, and they get pissed off at me every once in a while. They're like, Martino, will you ever answer a damn question I ask you? I'm like, well, I learned this from Bill. The answer's in you, and if I need to tell you, then the answer's not in you, and you know what? You're not going to be a good entrepreneur, and maybe you shouldn't be doing this.
Well, that's true, and I think Bill was the antithesis of overthinking anything. His idea was to simplify it and to bring it down to first principles, which is right or wrong, which is good or bad, which is about people. And that's what he brought it down to. And when you operate at that level, it all seemed kind of magical, because complicated things, things that we overthink, things that we study, things that, there's case studies written about this and that, and we can go to the internet every day and get all sorts of in-depth information and coaching around very complicated issues. And it all seems remote. Bill didn't treat it as remote. He treated it as very, very core to, if you know how to be a human being, you know how to be a leader. And if you know how to be a leader, you know how to be an entrepreneur.
Here's an insight from Bill that we thought we'd share with you.
I thought every Silicon Valley's been wonderful to me, and I thought that giving back would be the right thing to do. I thought giving back some of my operating experience would probably be better than most anything. I didn't think I'd be a very good venture capitalist. I think I can get you from here to here probably as well as most, but I'm not sure I could get here. The application of technology and Steve Jobs or John Doerr, Vinod Khosla, people like that I didn't have. I didn't really feel like I could do that. So that was a good opportunity for me to help. And everybody likes my fees. It's hard to argue with zero.
And that's another great thought from our friend and mentor, Bill Campbell. There's a taxonomy you taught me that we're going to hit here in a minute. People in our business, in the venture business and in the business who bet on companies are either product pickers, they're people pickers, or they're market pickers. And it's interesting because Bill would always tell me, he would say, hey, you know, I'm a marketing guy who really loves technology. You, on the other hand, you're a classically trained technologist and you want to know all this bullshit marketing stuff. That's the easy stuff. But I do want to give Bill some credit here. As much as he was a people picker, to use your taxonomy of people, products, and market, boy, he was a damn good marketer. I think people underestimate how good an actual marketer he was because he got to the essence as you're describing, which is what marketing is all about.
I think you're so right. I don't think, and I certainly know you don't mean to do it, and I don't want to do it in this podcast is either. I don't want to denigrate his overall incredible intelligence and his ability to synthesize from technology and product to people. It's just that the most striking attribute of Bill were his people skills, right?
Right.
But the other things were also really powerful, and it was his ability to sort of bring it all together that made him so credible and therefore so powerful for entrepreneurs. I mean, most of the entrepreneurs that came to him were tech people. They had tech backgrounds. Bill had no tech background. I don't think Bill took a math or science course in college, right?
Right.
He may have, but I don't think he did. That's not how he thought about the world. And so I think a lot of them would approach Bill initially with some skepticism because, you know, tech people respect tech people. And Bill wasn't really a tech person. But on the other hand, Bill understood what they were saying. This is, I think, Mike Homer helped him an awful lot with this in the early years. Yogan Dalal, when we did Claris together, also really important to him. There's a lot of great people who have contributed to Bill's understanding of the general essence of what makes Silicon Valley tick. But what ultimately I think appealed to people about Bill that they'd never seen before, they'd seen tech people, they'd seen marketing people, they'd never seen somebody who understood them and leadership in an intuitive way.
That's right. And he had a love, he had a childlike love of the engineering and of the science that us jaded engineers almost couldn't have.
Yeah.
Right? We're too in the weeds. He could have that just all of discovery type moment. But what was interesting is, again, it was very personal though. It wasn't just the awe of the technology, it was the awe of the excitement on the engineer's face who had created it. A very, very different way to think about innovation.
And one-on-one, it worked really well. But, you know, engineers, by definition, are skeptical, right? And so I can remember at Go Corporation when we were in trouble, when the product wasn't coming out as we expected, then we were running out of money and we're running out of time. And Bill did a rah-rah speech in front of the company. And, you know, everybody in operations got excited and everybody in marketing got excited. And the engineers didn't get excited. They were incredibly skeptical because he got up there and he tried to go straight to inspiration. And they wanted some facts and details. And this was lost in translation because in that large group, in that setting, Bill couldn't communicate that. He needed to do it one-on-one. He needed to go sit down at your desk with you and say, what's bothering you? Let me tell you why I think we can solve this problem. Let me tell you what I'm doing. Let me tell you what I need you to do. He needed to have that conversation. And when he was up in front of 100 engineers at Go Corporation in dire time, that got lost in translation as the engineers kept saying, yeah, but you're not giving me any hard facts.
Bill and I had some very difficult discussions during a restructuring that happened at Aggregate Knowledge that you were, of course, part of as our board member. We were a high flyer right out of the gate. You came in. We had big first customers. We were one of the tech darlings. It was 05, 06. And then we realized, oh, crap, this is going to be harder than we thought. Sometimes it goes up and to the right the whole way. But this wasn't. And this is when Bill got involved and we realized that the product we were selling really didn't have product market fit. We realized we needed a different kind of science. There was a whole bunch of things that we needed to do. And guess what? Some of our engineers, like the ones you're just describing, who were skeptical, who wanted the facts only, they were all set to hit the door. And as a matter of fact, a couple of them hit the door right out of the gate. And this was one of the most important meetings I ever had with Bill. He said, basically, look, you need killers in your company. And sometimes killers are also front runners. And the front runners can kill your company. And you know what? It's going to be painful, but you got to let them go because you know what? You're not going to be able to motivate them, not even one-on-one, which I'm doing right now. And so there was a limit even to what he could do one-on-one or what you could do as a CEO one-on-one when you had a certain personality type inside the company.
Well, let me go back to an experience I had directly with him at Claris. This is when I thought he was actually going to fire me or I was going to quit. And there was a very talented director of marketing who wasn't working well with the VP of marketing there. But I had a very close relationship with the person because I was doing a lot of transactions, acquisitions of companies, and this person was extremely useful to me. So he and I had a close relationship. And one day, this has been going on for a long time. One day, Bill comes into my office, shuts the door and goes, I'm going to fire the guy. Mm-hmm. And I go, he's incredibly talented. He's working really hard. He's getting a lot of stuff done. He's really helping us on the acquisition front. We're trying to acquire a lot of properties. I think this is a really wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. He's going, he's not fitting in. He's not working well with his management and leadership. And I said, well, have you looked at the management and leadership? And he said, yep. And I've looked at it. And clearly, you know, there's blame on all sides. But frankly, I'm going to back the leadership. And I said, I don't know if I can deal with that. And he said, well, you're going to have to decide. And we left that room not knowing whether I was going to quit, he was going to fire me, or I was going to continue. And that went on for about a week. And there were events when we were kind of cold to each other, trying to figure this out, because I was very, very upset with that decision. Ultimately, I came around and decided to try it his way, which, by the way, worked. But we almost fell apart very early in our relationship over an issue of firing somebody.
This makes me think of something else that for a broader audience, maybe not just the inside baseball Silicon Valley people who know who Bill is, there's something very uniquely Silicon Valley to the piece of the story that you're telling. You know, Bill went on to be one of your greatest friends in the world, I imagine, Randy, right?
Definitely.
I know how close, at just a deep personal level and how difficult it was for you when he passed on. I mean, I know. And so what's difficult to understand if you're not in Silicon Valley is you had a week where this guy might fire you. The rest of the world doesn't understand this. You had a week where this guy who's one of your great friends of your life might have fired you or you might have quit. And you know what? You know what, Randy? If you had quit or were fired, I'll bet Bill still would have been your best friend. I almost don't know a place in the world other than our business that these kinds of relationships actually happen. An anecdote I'll have here is when I got fired from Tribe, I got booted because I didn't get along with the new CEO. And Alan Morgan from Mayfield, part of the Yogan Dalal family there, came in and it was a Saturday. And he basically said to me, he said, okay, Martino, time's up. And I was pretty mad on Saturday and I was pretty mad on Sunday. And on Monday, I called him up. I said, I got an idea for my new company. Can I use your office? And I remember conveying the story nonchalantly to my dad, who was like, that asshole who you fired, you're going to go hang out in his office? I'm like, yeah, that's sort of actually how it kind of works. And so, but you knew that it didn't matter. The decision mattered a lot for the company, but for you and Bill, I'll bet the die was cast. Talk about that a bit.
Well, I think, again, a beautiful point here because, and again, I think Bill would characterize this anomaly as, you know, everything is personal and nothing's personal. Meaning it's all about the relationship, but when we act in the best interest of the organization or of the product or of the company or the investors, sometimes that's not going to be what you want it to be.
Right.
And you're going to have to accept that. And I can remember when I finally left go after winding it down, there was, John Doerr and Vinod Khosla and, of course, Jerry Kaplan and Robert Carr, but you also had Bill. They were all in your camp trying to help you find your next job.
Right.
They were all there, right? It had failed. It had failed. And yet, you know, they found Mike Homer a job at Netscape. Right. And Robert Carr went off to become the VP of engineering at Autodesk. And Jerry Kaplan started a great new company in the auction space before eBay and on and on and on. And that's the power of the tribe. That's the power of the network in Silicon Valley. And once you've established yourself in that network, you've got incredible ability to find great opportunities and to bring resources and power to those opportunities.
Thank you for listening to No Bull. This episode was produced by Edit Audio. To find out more about this conversation, check out www.bullpencap.com/nobull. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts.